This week on Crime World.
There was a Republican police from 1920. I mean, the IRA was effectively trying to run an underground government. And actually, there was a crime wave. 1919, 1920, there's a wave of bank robberies, post office robberies, robberies of individuals, robberies of pubs in Dublin and in rural areas as well. So the IRA tried to actually clamp down on that. They, on occasion, solving bank robberies and giving the money back to the banks. Now,
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you can listen to my podcast, Crime World, wherever you get your podcasts.
An Irish Independent digital subscription doesn't just get you the news. It gets you the best of Ireland's stories all in one place. Whether it's the best of politics, business, sport, entertainment or lifestyle. Get it all for just €4 a month for 12 months when you first subscribe. Visit independent.ie/subscribe today. Irish Independent. Terms and conditions apply. Cancel any time.
On the latest episode of Real Help with me, Carl Henry, I'm delighted to be joined by trichologist Claire Fulham, chatting all things hair loss.
I remember then going, I'm losing a bit more hair. Like, I could see hair everywhere. It was all over my desk and work everywhere. And so I went to my GP. She found 5 big patches on my scalp, one the size of my fist. So I was like, right, what am I going to do about this? Give me a plan. She just looked me dead in the eye and said, there's nothing you can do. I went on list for dermatologists. She had a cancellation and she very quickly said, yes, you have alopecia areata.
As ever, available on all podcast platforms.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
It's April 2022 and global authorities serve notice on the Kinahan cartel.
Very pleased to be here today for this important announcement of a series of actions our countries and organizations are undertaking jointly to counter the Kinahan transnational criminal organization.
Since then, the authorities in Ireland and abroad have been cracking down on their operation.
Irish Independent, Monday the 15th of November, 2021. Kinahan cartel associate Graeme the Whig Whelan has been jailed for 18 months for money laundering offences.
Drogheda Independent, 2nd of June, 2022. The Special Criminal Court has ordered the seizure of a Mercedes worth an estimated €50,000 from an international crime gang member.
Sunday World, Monday, February 5th, 2024. Senior Kinahan gang member Whelan is listed as the director of Eco Green Wheelie Clean Ireland. It was listed for strike off by the company registration office on Monday of this week.
Kinahan cartel lieutenant Graeme the Whig Whelan and mob money launderer Thomas Rooney are the latest organised crime figures to be caught up in a crackdown on rogue companies by Irish authorities. I'm Ellen Coyne, and today on the Indo Daily, I'm joined by Niall Donald, deputy editor at the Sunday World, to uncover the striking figures behind struck-off companies as authorities try to tackle the underworld crime lords. So, Niall, can you start by telling us why is Graeme Whelan back in the headlines this week?
Well, he's back in the headlines probably for a much less exciting reason than some of his previous appearances, but it's basically because a company that he set up is due to be struck off. And these are sort of relatively routine things that happen by the company's registration office, where they strike off companies that are inactive or you know, not filing accounts. But of course, Graeme Whelan, his company did become a feature in a case taken by the Criminal Assets Bureau, where they heard about an eco company really cleaning wheelie bins. Details were given about money going through those accounts. And he subsequently went to prison. And now the company has been inactive and is being struck off.
Okay, and so tell us a little bit about Graeme Whelan, also known as The Whig.
Known as The Whig for probably the reasons that are lost in history, but I think it was something to do with he had a really long fringe as a teenager and it stuck with him. It wasn't actually one of the media nicknames, you know, it was a genuine
grassroots
nickname.
Okay.
A grassroots nickname, or literally. But Graeme Whelan was first in the papers as a 17-year-old because he was at the centre of probably the most infamous cocaine bust in the history of Irish gangland. There was £1.2 million worth of coke was discovered in a Holiday Inn in 2000. And the fallout from that led to the Crumlin and Drimna feud. One side sided with Brian Radigan, one side sided with Fat Freddie Thompson. But a 17-year-old who was there when the drugs were seized was Graeme Whelan. And he ultimately went to prison for 6 years for that seizure. But that seizure, it still is relevant even today, 22 years on.
That's amazing that he's been kind of immersed in this world for so long and from such a young age.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he wasn't obviously named initially, but by the time it came to court, he was 18 and he was named, and he famously told the police he'd do the time standing on his head. And in fairness to him, he did. He probably earned a reputation as a result as a stand-up soldier in that world that he came from. He did his time. Didn't give names, was a young man. I think there's a scene in A Bronx Tale famously where you see that kind of attitude. And he, as a result, he came out and he became, remained involved in organised crime, was a suspect for being involved in the drugs trade in the South Inner City. He was a very close pal of Liam Byrne and David Byrne. David Byrne, who obviously would be ultimately shot dead in the Regency. He earned his reputation, I suppose, through that drugs bust. But over the next 20 years, his name was always being linked to the crimes associated with the Kinahan cartel, in particular that branch of it, the Byrne Organised Crime Group.
So a very prominent figure.
Very prominent figure. At one stage, he did leave the country for the same reason that a lot of people did. I mean, that the Crumlin Drimna feud, I think, depends how you categorise it, but there was up to 18 people killed, and a number of them ultimately would leave the country at periods of time because of safety concerns.
This is the latest Garda report on the feud and the gangs behind it. It catalogues a decade of shootings, stabbings and pipe bombings, which has left 15 people dead and a community under siege.
Graham Whelan went and lived in Birmingham, which became a kind of a second city for Irish criminals, really, and largely because of a guy called Thomas Bomber Kavanagh, who was based there, who would have been the Byrne's brother-in-law. He's ultimately now behind bars in England for drug trafficking offences, serving a 22-year prison sentence. So Graham Whelan went over and was involved with him over there, and then he continued to have a role in organised crime. Ultimately, after the Regency Hotel and the emergence of the Hutchkinahan feud, he was brought back into Dublin. He returned around 2016. He set up a number of companies, including this one in particular. He was in and out of the country at that time, and on one of the occasions when he was back in the country, he stayed in a very luxury hotel, put it that way, in Ballsbridge. And while he was there, he was raided by Gardaí, and that began a kind of a process of where both the guards prosecuted him. Ultimately, he was discovered with a relatively small sum of money, considering what these guys can have. He was also discovered with a luxury watch. I won't even attempt to pronounce it because I don't know what it is. There wasn't a Casio. That's probably my extent. But he was discovered with a watch. I think it was worth 28,000 or something like that. And when he was questioned by the guards about where he had this sum of money, which is a couple of thousand, he said he got it from up a Swiss roll. And he said, he told the guards to Google him, if you want to know who he is and what he's about. So that began a kind of a process where ultimately he was convicted of money laundering and was given an 18-month prison sentence. But also then CAB had begun an investigation that would lead to 75,000 being taken off him. And he went into prison. He's out about a year. He's now popping up in a different way, I suppose, in social media, dating the sister of a celebrity. Just before he went into prison, he suffered a deep personal tragedy. His partner died. So in the court case, he spoke about that and how he was going to change his ways and look after his four kids. So time will tell, but he's been one of those people that have been at the centre of organised crime for over 2.5 decades now at this stage.
It's so interesting when you have these huge, colourful figures and you think about the very serious crimes that they've been associated with, but then you have something that seems a little bit more pedestrian, like not filing accounts on time. But it kind of helps us to understand like who these people are and how they work. And I think there was another company that was listed to be struck off belonging to Thomas Rooney. Is that right?
Thomas Rooney would have been, unlike Graham Whelan, he would not have been somebody that people would have known the name of. He never would have appeared in the newspapers until he was charged. But he was a key member of, was described in court as a transnational gang. He was described as a mid to high ranking member. And that was a gang controlled by a guy called Thomas Marr. Thomas Marr is from Clara, County Offaly, not necessarily a hotbed of organised crime. And Thomas Marr is currently serving, I think it's 24 years in the UK. He was a trucker. He was involved in the trucking business. He, at some point, left Ireland under suspicion of a Garda investigation. But he became a very key figure in the logistics business of drug trafficking. Like, drug trafficking is not just getting drugs in on ships. What you also have to do then is move it around the countries that it's going to. You also have to then collect that money, which is nearly always cash. Now, there are obviously bitcoins and electronic payments, but a lot of it is a big bulk of money, which is more bulky even than cocaine. So Thomas Marr was heavily involved in the movement of both the drugs and the money across Europe, in mostly in the UK, but also back to Ireland. And one of his key men was a guy called Thomas Rooney. And he was ultimately discovered in possession of, I think it was 289,000 in cash, in a, I think it was a Spar hold all bag, and also 65K in sterling. And that was part of what that gang did, which was get the money out of the country, back to the people ultimately, you know, who knows how far it goes. Thomas Rooney ultimately was given 6 years. He was also subject to other orders where a car was seized off him. But again, he had a company, just like Graham Whelan. They have to have, in order to have some income in Ireland, these guys tend to have companies as well to show legitimate income. And it's another strike off. But again, that was a really interesting sort of gang led by Marr. He came to prominence because he was arrested as part of the death of the migrants in the refrigerated truck.
Our main story is the discovery of 39 bodies in a lorry container in Essex. The vehicle, which is thought to have crossed the English Channel from Zeebrugge in Belgium to the port of Tilbury in Essex, was apparently being driven by a 25-year-old man from Northern Ireland who's been arrested on suspicion of murder.
He was never charged in connection with that, but he really came to the police attention then. He had owned one of the trucks, the truck that was used. He was raided. He did an interview then saying it had nothing to do with it, which in fairness, he didn't seem to have done in particular. But it certainly sort of opened the attention on him. And ultimately, he was caught on one of the encrypted phones with just a series of messages, these EncroChat phones that were hacked into, just about the movement of drugs back and forth through the UK. It was a multi-million pound business run over these encrypted phones. And you could see it was all logistics. You collect this, you drop this. Really, really interesting stuff.
So it seems like he had a fairly impressive drugs logistics business, but it was only after the death of these migrants that actually brought him to the attention of the authorities.
Oh, 100%. Now he may have had him on some sort of lists anyway, but certainly then they started looking at people in particular. The scale of it, I think, was surprising to everybody involved. And just that's a really key role in these organised crime gangs, these international crime gangs who really rely on people to move stuff around the place, you know.
Another person whose company was listed for strike off is Marcus Sweeney, who people might know of as, I don't know, would you describe him as a kind of former socialite?
Well, he doesn't like that description, but he doesn't like any of descriptions, I think. I mean, Marcus Sweeney, I think it's fair, though, to say he was a socialite. He was forever associated with the Celtic Tiger, striking-looking guy, would have been a regular in places like Lily's and Reynard's. I don't know if that was of your vintage, but it was of mine. But so he appeared on all these social pages. But famously, he dated Katie French, and he became a kind of a national celebrity when they had a big row over a photo shoot, and he interrupted it and demanded it stop. And then Marcus Sweeney kind of went quiet after the Celtic Tiger, but he reappeared in 2019. He kind of hit the headlines again. The reason it was is that he was arrested in connection with a heroin seizure. Now, he was arrested but never charged. Two guys who were effectively Turkish mafia guys in the UK were ultimately discovered with £1.2 million worth of heroin in a location in Dublin. Marcus Sweeney had met with them earlier in the day. He was arrested but released, never charged. But that began a Criminal Assets Bureau investigation into him. They ultimately focused on a company he had set up, Evergreen Wealth Management. That company had bought a field in County Dublin. And that became the subject of this CAB investigation. And famously, it went to court. Marcus Sweeney didn't contest it. But during the summation from the judge, he described Marcus Sweeney as being up to his oxters in organised crime, which means, I think, armpits, actually. Which
that's
I
right.
I did Google it. and in that case, then, you heard how, according to CAB, that a major criminal gang in Dublin, known as the Family, one of the key members of that gang had invested money, according to CAB, given it to Marcus Sweeney, and that field had been bought with the proceeds of crime. That wasn't contested. Ultimately, that piece of land will be seized by the state and sold off. It was auctioned off, and the company then would be due for one of these routine strike-offs, I think, where, you know, if there hasn't been action, basically, they do get struck off. It's a kind of a complicated story. Obviously, Marcus Sweeney became a TikTok star in the aftermath of it, and I suppose took offence to some of the stuff that was being said, but that is what the court said, and that is what the court judged. And the Field of Dreams is gone, I suppose.
And he has got a bit of a reputation for being a little bit hypersensitive to media coverage about him.
Well, I suppose none of us would want to get that type of media coverage. So we can understand it on that level. Obviously, Katie French's death was really, really tragic. And, you know, but it was really, really big news at the time as well. I think she was probably the first really well-known Irish person that had maybe died in that manner. And Marcus Sweeney got catapulted into the limelight. And he took offence at that, in that, you know, he was forever associated with her tragic death, which is judged to be as a result of cocaine use. And now he'll say, well, he has said various types of explanations in that I just bought a field and I didn't know this and I didn't know about the guys that were investing. But look, I suppose that's the nature of social media. People are allowed to give their defence and the public can read the court copy.
It's really interesting though, like you've taken us through three figures there who obviously have their links to serious organised crime might vary, but the one thing that they have in common is that they have these kind of companies that have gotten into trouble for not having the proper paperwork filed. I'm really interested, like how common is it for people in this world to use these companies, and is it kind of just routine that they're being listed for strike-off, or does that mean that people are kind of closing the net on...
If you look at the Kinahans, if you go back to the early 2000s, you will see Daniel's name on a couple of companies, and you'll see nothing from them through all of that time. They completely stopped registering in any companies. If you live in Ireland and you have your assets in Ireland, you have to be able to show some income. And this is not focusing on these three people in particular, but if you're a criminal and you're involved in that world, you have to be able to justify your spending. So there was always a couple of kind of cash businesses that really appealed to the criminal figures. Stuff like bouncy castles and, you know, taxi businesses where people are exchanging cash. And that would be a way, you know, to justify an income without having to hand in receipts. But you see, I suppose, the strength of, over the last decade in particular, how the Criminal Assets Bureau, and you saw that with the Byrne Organised Crime Group, how they were able to penetrate those kind of structures. They were able to focus on discretionary spending, holidays, clothes, and able to show that they, that in that case, it couldn't be justified by declared income. So I think the Criminal Assets Bureau have really got a handle on that type of spending. But there was a time, maybe a decade ago or a bit more, where people felt in the criminal world, felt comfortable registering a company. We've become, as a state, sophisticated, at least in tracking the spend of money.
And my thanks to Niall Donald for joining me today. I'm Ellen Coyne, and today's episode of the Indo Daily was produced by Garrett Mulhall, researched by Tabitha Monaghan, with sound by John Smith. Voiceovers were by Saoirse Mulgrew, Colin Brennan and John Smith. Archive clips from BBC News, RTE News and The Irish Independent. If you enjoy the Indo Daily, don't forget to follow the podcast and leave us a review.
We're offering Indo Daily listeners 50% off an Irish Independent digital subscription. Head over to independent.ie/redeem to sign up for unlimited access to premium content, e-paper, puzzles and more. Just enter the code INDO, that's I-N-D-O, to receive 50% off your subscription. Stay informed and engage. Subscribe today.